listening to Interview Under Fire.
All right. Hey there, everyone. Welcome once again to a brand new episode of Interview Under Fire. This is your host, Sunny, and with me today are three special guests, the talented British trio and the Wandering Hearts. It's an honor, guys. Thank you so much for joining our IUF series today. Now, this is an exciting time of the year for you with the release of your highly anticipated new album, the self-titled The Wandering Hearts, which drops here on August 6th on Cooking Vinyl. And first and foremost, I got to say, I want to congratulate you on getting all the well-deserved recognition you've been getting so far with this new record, with this collection of gripping singles. What is it? Dolores, Gold, Dreams, On Our Way, Over Your Body. Hopefully I'm not forgetting anything else, but it's right around the corner, right? And this is definitely quite the follow-up to your debut. And there's just so many things to unravel about this new album and who you're all about. But before we get to all that and beyond, we talked about it before the interview started. I do this all my guests. How are you? I think that's an important question to ask, considering what's been happening in our lives. Now that we're kind of getting back into the normality of things again, what's the UK been like for the last 7 months?
Weird is the short answer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Pretty weird. Like, everywhere's obviously been affected differently. But yeah, we have some strange government over here. I don't know if you heard about it over there.
Yeah. It's weird. It's weird because the question I just asked you, usually the question is, hey, how have you been doing lately? It's not what's your country been like, you know?
Yeah.
Like, now that's the question. I feel like that is, I mean, weird is definitely an understatement, especially, I mean, I know you guys are hearing about what's going on here in the States. Everything's kind of just flipped on its head. And, but is it weird? Did you want to add anything else to that besides weird?
I think the thing that was really weird is that, like, we were in the States last February and March, and we had loads of touring and stuff planned. And so we were playing a gig. So South by Southwest had got cancelled. We were like, oh, we're still going to go, because it's like, it's probably like not a thing. Like, we'll still go. Like, this is just like an overreaction. Like, we totally misjudged it. What was interesting about the US versus the UK is that, so we were like, we flew to Connecticut, we did a gig, we flew to Tampa, Florida, we did a gig. And our friends at home were like, guys, are you coming back? And we're like, nah, I don't know. We've got gigs. We're gonna do this like underground thing happening in Austin. Like, that's what we're gonna do. And then in the UK, like, everyone was scrambling for like toilet roll.
Yeah.
There was no pasta, no rice, there was like nothing. And we were like hugging people, you know, when you could do that.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's been, so I think what was really weird was the juxtaposition of the US and then coming back to a UK, and within a couple of days we were locked down. And like, the first thing that happened was, I don't know what it was like for you guys, but you know, you were only allowed out for like a half hour exercise walk. If you went to the shops, it was like one person from each household. It was really, I remember like being like, can I go to the shop again? Because I really need milk, but I've done my shop now. So I think that was the big kind of juxtaposition. I know you've had lockdowns in the US, but it felt really weird to be back so quickly at home and then not be able to do anything. So it's felt weird. So now it's getting back to normal. I guess new normal.
We've had a little bit more time together in real life recently, which has been really nice. And we've been able to
You can touch people again.
Yeah. We've got back to a little bit of, you know, like you said, normality, and we've been able to do more. And obviously that's really important for us, because like you say, this is a quite crucial time, and this new album has been, you know, it's been on the back burner because of everything. So, and it's been delayed and pushed back. And so this feels like, you know, with everything opening up a little bit more, feels great, because it means that we can do a little bit more around the album and to promote it and to get it out to everyone.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, everything you're saying I don't know if you get that feeling, it kind of just sits in the back of your head, like too much to ask for. I just want to perform my songs. Like, I love what I do. I'm just something that I'm passionate for. And now this is happening. Obviously, it's you can talk about the unprecedented like pandemic. There's like that Spanish flu, obviously, in the early 1900s. We can talk about that. But we're talking about everything happening right now, right? I do want to wind the clock back, guys, to maybe several years back, to think 2015, because for fans and listeners who may not know, if you could just briefly talk about that defining moment in your lives that led to the forming of the Wandering Hearts into who you are today, because you have been on quite the journey. And if I'm correct, you guys met over drinks and you even had a fourth member, Tim, at that time. And before you know it, there was like a demo on SoundCloud. Take it away, like, because I think it's just an amazing story. Y'all are looking at each other. This is great.
Like you say, we kind of, we were all kind of introduced through mutual friends, put in touch through people that we knew who were moving in similar circles in London, on the music scene. And, but we'd never crossed paths. We all got together this one afternoon, and Tara bought some cans of gin and tonic. We started singing together, and something weird happened. And it, you know, you can spend years practicing things to get things really slick and to, you know, sing well together, and for some reason it just worked instantly. Our singing together, our voices, everything about it. We've all sung a lot up until that point, individually and with other people, but something felt really different about this. And so we all just said, let's do that. Let's do it again. You know, we're not really sure what this is and what it means, but it feels really good. So we're going to do it again.
Do you ever talk about that moment in your life? Like, just today, it's like, hey, remember that time when you bought drinks and we, like, yeah. I don't know. Like, if something like that, something special like that, definitely. I don't know if it was something that you set out to become a band, is just something that happened. We're like,
yeah,
you know,
and we all just said yes to the right things at the right time, and just were, you know, we were all in a place in our lives at that moment that we were kind of almost looking for something else to do in that way. So we did that and started singing and just recorded a song, kind of so that we had it and we didn't forget it. We popped it on SoundCloud, and 27 minutes later, actually 26 minutes later, we had a message from our now manager, who is obviously still our manager. And he was like, hey, like, I used to work at Sony, just like really interested in what you guys are doing, blah, blah, blah. And we thought, yeah, right, yeah. Cool, sure. I'm sure this happens all the time.
Sneaky online predator.
Yeah. So we didn't really trust
him. Nothing weird about that at all.
But turned out he was genuine and not a predator and very nice guy. And so he came and met us and we sang for him. And yeah, it kind of snowballed from there, really. I think maybe took six to eight months, and we signed with Decca Records, and and we started to kind of build our team and make the first record. So yeah, it all happened very quickly. And I don't think until we have had the last 18 months to sit and think about what we've done for the last few years, it's really only been now that we've realized that we've stopped and realized, oh, okay, like, we did all of that. That was amazing. Even though we talk about it all the time, gave us some real kind of perspective on what we'd achieved and also what we wanted to do moving forward. So that's in some ways, the pandemic has given us that time and that perspective, which has been really nice.
Man, that's, I feel like you guys could just write a book just about that, just that moment in your lives. Cause it's great. I love hearing stories like that about something that almost, I don't want to say unplanned, but it was just something you didn't see coming. And now you're taking advantage of it. And speaking of taking advantage of it, like, this pandemic, I mean, making the best of the situation, right? Now, you guys are gearing up to go tour soon. Is that correct?
Yes.
So when is that? Is that next year? I heard 2022, but is it?
We've actually got a tour. So we were supposed to be coming back when we were in the US last year. The plan was that we were going to be coming back and pretty much going straight into a UK tour.
Yeah.
But obviously, like, that got put back. And we've ended up, it's kind of changed the nature of that tour now a little bit because of how our, like, albums ended up getting kind of, like, the release date of that's moved around a little bit as well. So we're actually doing a quite an intimate acoustic tour quite soon.
August, September.
Yeah, but just under 20 dates across, yeah, August and September around the UK. But then we've got a really big tour that we've just announced for next year, which is going to be super exciting. That's
yeah, is it the In Harmony one that you were talking about?
That's the acoustic one.
Okay. That's the acoustic one.
And then on our way tour is next year.
Yeah. Now, tours, right? What's the commonality is, okay, we always think about life before the pandemic. And the thing is, like, you think about 2015, but you've been at this for a while. If you think about it, that's what, 6 years? I mean, obviously it feels like it went by in a blink. But as you're telling me about your experiences, guys, I begin to think, you know, how was the touring life? Just the live music experience for each of you personally? Because you guys have done some extensive touring. You know, you've shared the stages with, you know, Robert Plant, Mumford & Sons, Tom Petty, Stevie Nicks, Lucas Nelson. That list goes on. And now we've been all just kind of been forced to take this unexpected step back. And I'm sure if this time lately has made you develop, I don't know, a newfound appreciation of the touring life, like what was your favorite part about it?
We did this really big tour. It was Justin Townsend was doing a tour across the kind of American South. So I think we started in North Carolina and we kind of went all the way through and ended up in Austin, Texas. And so we drove that whole way, but did, you know, Mississippi and Jackson, yeah, and, you know, yeah, Orleans and Birmingham. You know, these amazing places, but we started actually in New York City, didn't
that's
we?
Right,
we
did, yeah.
Yeah, or New Jersey.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And it wasn't big money. It wasn't like a well-paid tour. And so, like for us as, you know, Brits, it's like it just needs to pay enough to get your flights out there, to cover your visas, you know. And so we just need to kind of go and do that. And so they said, you know, you're not going to have a tour manager. You're not going to have anyone with you. You're going to be completely unsupervised. So it was just us three. And our friend Lee that plays everything with us, so he's multi-instrumentalist. And so we hired a car, and I mean, there was so much stuff. It was just like a comedy sketch. Trying to get, like, there was no visibility. Trying to drive the car, we couldn't hire an expensive car, so it was like a small car. And we just had the most incredible time, you know, playing in these venues and meeting all these different people. And then after the show, everybody was coming up and meeting us and buying these records. But what I guess the pandemic's done is, we were talking about the other day, not to sound too, I guess, like morbid or fatalistic, or, you know, but you didn't know what was going to come out of this pandemic.
Yeah.
It's like, is there going to be a music industry? Is yeah. there going to be
a scene?
Yeah. Is there going to be, you know, are we ever going to, you know, the music was the first thing to stop and the last thing to open. And we were talking about it, and it was like, if we never got to do that again, that poorly paid tour was one of the most incredible things for, you know, three people from England to kind of come over and, you know, spend a month or so playing these amazing venues and stay. And so if that was it, we'd be going, that was really cool, let alone the Ryman's and the Opry's and everything
else. And like, it's all that, like, you know, when you hear people like list, like you just listed those names, when you hear someone list those names back to you, it's like that kind of stuff is what the last kind of 18 months has made me realize. It's like, we've done loads and it's been amazing. And if it did all end tomorrow, you know, I would feel like there's still more I wanted to do, but I'd feel satisfied in what we've done.
Yeah, grateful.
I'm really grateful for everything, every opportunity that we've had. And it's like, because we've had time to stop. When you know, it's like when you're on the road, it's like promo and shows and interviews, and it's constant. You don't really get time. And we really try to celebrate all the little wins that we get, but it's really hard because when you don't have the time to stop. So obviously we've had that time, and it's been amazing to be able to kind of really sit in that and appreciate all of that stuff.
Yeah, like something like that. I'm a nostalgic person. I don't know if that was very clear to you guys earlier, but like, I always like to look back on things like that, like little things. Now you can say, like, at that time, you weren't really thinking about it, you know, like you said, and everything starts to get it's like a metaphor. I'm thinking about it on the fly right now. You're driving, and then things start to get smaller and smaller and smaller as you go further into the future, you know. But then yeah. you start to really peer into the, like when you're at a stop on the car, just hear me out. You know, you're on the road, you're on the car, and you look in the rearview mirror and you start to really pay attention to what you may have missed out on. And yeah. you know, before, I don't know, that's the first time I ever came up with that. I like that, actually. As you're telling me about your experiences, I want to get your take on this, because a very common subject on Interview Under Fire, I'm sure this is with other music publications as well, you guys have seen this. A lot of artists have done it, live streaming, you know, what they've been doing on the stage or taking it to the screen like we're doing right now. Obviously these interviews would be in person, but I've had over 300 interviews on here, and there's no wrong answer to what I'm about to ask, because the venues you played at, the artists you played with, the people you've collaborated with throughout your careers. I want to ask you, do you think that the rise of the quarantine-induced live streaming that we've been seeing, kind of still seeing today, is that going to affect the touring musician business going forward through your perspective? Like, do you still see bands doing something like this once we enter, you know, 2022 and beyond? Like, has it already been affected? I don't know. Well, like, what are your thoughts on that?
You can definitely see it, like, carrying. It's got a use, hasn't it? Like, and we, during the pandemic and during everyone's like lockdown situations, whatever was going on, obviously, what a great opportunity and platform like that to be able to use them. But like, if live music opens up again, there isn't a substitute for that. Like, it's never going to be a substitute for live music, is it? Really?
You can go crazy in your own room, right? That's it.
you can't compare being in a room. With people and seeing live music, that energy, you can't replicate that. Also, your band can't. So when you're in a room, you can have the best, in my opinion, you can have the best mics, the best musicians, the best producers, and you're never gonna get, if you think about Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and you can be in a room with them and hear that, or you can watch an amazing live stream, I put everything on the line and tell you that it's never going to be the same.
Yeah.
And there's also like there's a kudos to, you know, everyone, you know, my dad saw Ella Fitzgerald play in like New York City.
Oh gosh.
And it's like, he'd go, you know, he wouldn't be like, oh yeah, I caught her on a live stream. Like, there's a kudos to be able to go, I saw the Eagles, or I watched Tom Petty's last. It's like, there's also like, there's ego involved in that. And I think that we have to acknowledge that there's ego, and actually like that makes it quite exclusive and special. So I think it's great if people, you know, are like agoraphobic, if people aren't well, if people are, you know, this is a wonderful way of having
accessibility
in your lounge.
Totally. Like, and that's what it has been so brilliant for that.
Yeah.
And I think there will, going forward, still be occasions where that might be really good and useful, but I don't think it's going to affect live, like in-person live shows and the touring.
I
don't think it will.
Not as long as that can go ahead in the same way as it has. Like, exactly. Presuming that we've got like normal normality,
and
like,
we can do that.
There's no substitute for that.
No,
not at all. And I've had so many talented artists like yourselves come on here and say, yeah, I would love to do live streaming. It gives me a chance to engage with my fans. And some artists would say, I'm not doing anything until all this is over. And obviously there's that uncertainty going forward. But my mind is racing right now, because everything that you guys are telling me, because we can tell now the future generation. We did the live streaming, like, oh, okay. It could be a normality for the future generation. Hopefully not. But you get what I'm saying? Because everything has kind of taken over. I remember when I went to, I don't know if you guys heard about this, Metallica of all bands, they did this live streaming for one weekend last summer here in the States. Dallas, Texas sold out immediately. Luckily, my friend had a ticket. I'm like, okay, sure, I'll go. I don't know if I want to go or not. So I went there and it felt like an actual show. You know, people showed up with drinks and all that in between. We're like outside. It felt like a festival. And then we sit down in our cars, and then we lay back on our seats, and then now it starts to really hit you. Like, okay, this isn't okay. Now I see the difference now. It felt so different. And you know, what's the common thing you see like at a show, right? You get that adrenaline rush when you're on stage and you see just this sea of hands, just the people waving their hands in the air, and you see just a, it's like a festival, you know, that's what that is. And instead, what do we get? I remember Three Days Grace opened, and he said, hey, let me hear you honk your horns, guys. So if you roll your windows down, you just hear people honking their horns, just like in darkness, in the silence. It just felt so, the point of me telling you this, it just makes me miss the live experience even more. And that's just the point that you guys made. You can't replace that live feeling. You know what I'm saying? So it's pretty interesting, an interesting experience. I don't know if you guys have had that yet, but over there in the UK, but as far as like,
We've tried a few different things. Like we did try a live stream early in the pandemic. We got together and we did a gig that we live streamed, didn't we? And then
we tried to do it like a proper gig. Yeah. So we really like the best sound people, the best stuff that we could do. And everyone, you know, we did a small thing yesterday for launching the album.
Yeah.
And there's sort of 10 or so people that, you know, basically had this Q&A kind of thing with us and an album playback. They all remarked on the amount of live streams that they'd seen, but they were like the quality of what you did in terms of like acoustically, sonically, was really great. And that was really quite intentional that we wanted to do it. But what I do really remember from that was we kind of knew there wasn't going to be a real audience, but I remember like getting to the end of like the opening song, which is you always pick the song that's going to get everyone on their feet. And like, whatever it was like, you know, we got to the end and we were like, yeah. And then there was like nothing.
Oh, man.
Realizes that as a band, you always use that opportunity to be like, oh my God, I haven't got enough level. That was cool.
Yeah. You get that cover with the, yeah.
And
the
then suddenly audience. We're like, what? And then like, because no one's clapping, you're like, was it not there? Was it good?
Everything, because it's all like, everything's plugged in and it's like going out live, but it's not, they're not in the room. There's that like that live element or that energy or whatever it is that is going on, like kind of gives you a bit of like leeway as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to say anything that's going to be incriminating here.
No. The floor is yours, man.
I almost feel like, especially like when you're doing a live show, like the force and the energy of what you're doing, can like you get caught up in that, you know? Yeah. Whereas if everything's like broken down in a live stream, it's really easy to put every single individual aspect under a microscope, and then go, "Oh, I thought that part of the performance was good, but this bit was different," because you're watching it on a screen.
Yeah,
you get to see what people are saying like right there.
Yeah.
And the dynamic, like what you're hearing, is obviously dependent on the speakers that you have or how you're listening to it. So you're missing like key elements of the sound and the energy that's in the room immediately. So it makes it, from a performance point of view, like it makes it a little bit weirder to get your head around and feel a bit more like you're recording.
Yeah.
And totally. The pressure that comes with that as opposed to
when
that.
When you play live, it's like you do it and it's done, it's gone.
It's
gone. And like with that, it was more like you were playing it and you knew that you were going to, like people were watching it, but also you could watch it back when it was done. So you'd be like, oh, that's not going to be very good.
Was that good?
That was a
bit of a duff note. Yeah. Like, rather than like hearing that applause, hopefully, and like getting caught up in like the kind of comfort and like support that the end, like the audience gives you. You finish the song, like you say, it's like, is that
next,
wrong?
Next.
Man, it's just nice to have something to look forward to, like a tour, you know? That's why I'm so happy that you guys are doing that. And again, I'm just a fan out of millions out there. Please add Dallas to your list, please. But I mean, if anything, I will come see you guys in Austin, I promise. Now, we talked about everything from head to toe. Let's talk about the second album, all right? I promise we'll get to that right now. Drops August 6th on Cooking Vinyl. Now, I said it before, this is quite the follow-up to your 2018 debut album, Wild Silence, and I personally love that record. That was a massive success, guys, like because it led to you guys performing in like festival circuits. You guys made your US debut in Nashville, mainly due to the legendary Marty Stewart, which we'll talk about here in a second. You guys performed in venues like the Ryman Auditorium, Grand Ole Opry. I remember those venues in Nashville, which makes you the first British band to ever do that. I mean, touring the US. Now, I know I'm throwing a lot at you, but knowing the success of a debut album, what's the thing we hear when a debut album comes out, right? That sophomore slump. like that second album, it's like that kind of seeps into the back of your head. I've had many friends who are artists who think about that sometimes when they release their debut album. But have you three, like, have you ever felt any sort of pressure during this whole process? Or does it make it easier because, okay, we got our first album out the gate, now we can relax and do whatever we want? Has that ever entered your head?
I've never, honestly, ever felt pressure. I feel like our first album was a real amazing, not experiment, that's the wrong word, but because we were such a, and we were so new to it as a band, mm-hmm. when we made that first record, we didn't necessarily have the foundations that we do now as a band, as people, as friends. So we kind of created the first album with the help from other people, and they were like, this is really good, and it's like, that's amazing. We, you know, had the wonderful Decca Records behind us, and that was great, and it created this kind of amazing springboard for us into the industry, which was brilliant. And I think this next record, not only has it been a long time and we'd written so many songs that we were desperate to make another record already, we also had just, so, like, we'd evolved, things had changed, and we'd evolved as people, as a band, as, you know, the industry had evolved, has evolved, you know, so many things had changed that we felt like, you know, it was like moving with the times and moving with that. And so we were so desperate to get this next record out. I don't think any of us really thought, oh, well, let's hope it's as good as the last one, because we knew it was going to be different, and we knew it was going to be a completely different thing. So in some ways it feels like our first all over again. I think it being, you know, being self-titled, it feels like, you know, this almost feels like the real start to it for us.
I'm making an observation here. I love how both of you looked at Chess as she was talking, because it showed how meaningful everything was. You guys just, because this is the first time you guys just looked at her, but just straight out as she was talking about it. Because here's the thing, you're talking about building a foundation, right? The three of you guys, now, if I may, I'm going to just throw this out there, because my head's going to explode. There's so much about this album that I loved. You had this uncanny chemistry, the vocal layers and the patterns between you three throughout this. Like, how easy or difficult is something like that? Like, how do you know, like, okay, I'm going to sing this part, you take this part, you take this part? Is this something that just clicked from the beginning? Because it just flowed so well from song to song. AJ, I know you're dying to get yourself out there. Go ahead.
Well, I don't know. Like, yes, for you, because we definitely had that, like, kind of spark at the start. And like you said earlier, like, we've sung with other people, we've sung in groups or choirs or, like, with family members and stuff over the years. So, like, we're kind of used to, like, blending our voices to, like, different extents and stuff, right?
I like how you're looking at them like, right? Is that right? All right.
Yeah, I was checking. But when we got together, it was, it was like, there was something really special about it. It felt really easy. But I also feel at the same time, it would be doing not just us a disservice, but, like, people in general, to kind of like pretend that we don't work on it. It's just the way and how we work at finding our parts comes sometimes a bit easier to us, because we are so often just already thinking in each other's heads and vocal, like, in our voices, you know, vocal lanes already. So we come at things already with a level of understanding where we're just going, hey, I can kind of pretty much guess who this is going to suit the best, or where you're going to go, and then therefore, like, fill in the gaps, kind of, you know?
The blend stuff, though, like, I agree, like, it's that we spent a few days doing some harmonies for some different things, and, like, they weren't our songs. There's some things that we're having to play around with, and that didn't come quite so easily. Like, we really had to kind of think about it. But I'd say when we're writing a song, there's often, like, once you kind of work out, and I think this is going to be this, I would say that once you've kind of found your lane and your place, what I would say that we do, and I've never experienced this with anyone else, and we talk about it quite a lot, is that it is like we go into this shared headspace that we all, it's like, use a metaphor, but it's like there's a house that the three of us have keys to, but we didn't know all three of us had keys to the same house. When we all go into the same house, we just know exactly what's going on. So we, there's been amount of, you know, times where someone said, "Oh, just chuck a middle eight down. Can you just make something up?" And the three of us would be like, quite cocky, like, "Yeah, yeah, totally." And we will, and you know, chess moves, and AJ does, and it all just, and it blends, and that isn't the blend of stuff. I wouldn't say is something that we've ever really had to work on, and I
also don't think you can teach it.
Yeah,
don't think it's something that is teachable.
Yeah. Well, kind of. But I also think it's like it's listening to a degree that it almost doesn't feel like you're doing.
Yeah.
It's that sort of, we kind of will say it a lot, but like, the, you know, how people always say, "You've got two of these and one of these for a reason." we do. We have to do twice as much listening as we do singing. So I think on some, like, we are constantly just like fine tuning in to each other in a way that we don't listen sometimes to other people. We are kind of, the moment somebody moves, you're listening out for it and you're following, and it's kind of instinctive now, because we have, like, it's a shared headspace. But the moment we get into it, like, right, singing time now. It's why sometimes it's good for us to sing before a gig, because if we all come at it from, like, we're in a different place and get to do the show and go, "Oh, are we actually, like,
all together.
So it's really good for us to get into that space before singing, and we just find it, we're just kind of like, the moment somebody moves, like, somebody else is there ready to get move with them. That's kind of how it flows.
And it's also, we said the other day, this is a bit kind of weird and geeky, but we were singing something, and like, so often when you work in groups, you'll have someone, you know, everyone will take these quite obvious breaths or will physically move to be like, okay, and so
together.
And you all kind of come in at the same time so you can do that. And, like, I guess there's been moments of the recording we've done that, but the amount of times that we're singing and, you know, I'd never hear either of them breathe. Like, it doesn't, it's not, when I mean, they do it, they're still here. So I trust that they do breathe regularly. but there's something that, there's a real, and I think that what we have, it's like this weird, this real kind of trust that you know, there's no indication that they're going to sing with you, and actually sometimes they don't, and you are left on your own. But generally speaking, you know, we just enter this shared headspace, and everybody just sings, and it just works. And I don't know why.
Everything else gets shut out. It's so weird. It's like everyone's in.
It's funny though, because it's quite a lot of brain power without really realizing it. And I think we've just had 3 days together where we've been recording and filming stuff, and it's draining because you're going, it's almost like going into like a meditative state. Because you're doing that, it's so like hyper focused. That you come out of it, or like when we finish at the end of the day, you go, bloody hell, I'm knackered. We've sat here and just sung, but I'm knackered. And I think that shows how much it takes, so without thinking about it, but that shows how much kind of energy it takes to do it.
I would say it's like akin to working out your tax or accounts, but I don't ever do that.
I don't know why you compare it to that.
It's like doing really,
we're just throwing metaphors out there. Let's just throw it out there because it all works.
You know when you have like loads of really hard sums to work out?
We're
always doing, you know,
me and my math sums.
But that kind of like the moment that kind of energy that you put into that, you come away from it going, "Oh, bloody hell, like
my head hurts." It's
kind of the same.
We're just throwing metaphors out there. I'm just going to say it all works. And you talk about instinct. You can't really teach that to someone. And that's something that you guys had. Now, as far as like the vocals and blending it with the instrumentals, the Wandering Hearts, like in its entirety, it really, in my opinion, it really did have everything. Because I hope you know that you're raising the bar for yourselves, because it reminded me of bands like, you know, Greta Van Fleet, the Wellpennies, Fleetwood Mac, Simon and Garfunkel. If there was ever a combination of those four, I feel like this is what you get. And that's a good thing, because you had those, I'm a musician myself. So like the baritone and the harmonic atmospheres of folk, Americana, pop, acoustic, country, but it's not that simple, because there were so many colors that gave me that intricate, that intimate feeling. It even had grit. It was emotional. And my favorite part about all this is that it was different with that contemporary spark of everything that you guys are, which makes you stand out from that concentrated field of the country fused pop realm, the genres that I mentioned, you know, from songs like I got the track list here, you know, from Hammer Falls to Build a Fire to Dolores Dreams, and then Tell Me When I Wake Up. And then my personal favorite, The Closing Lullaby. I mean, before I stop talking, because it's obvious that I can't help myself, you know, walk me through this. You know, how much did things change from when you first started composing on this album to where you ended up finishing it? Did a lot change in between? Did nothing change? Was there already a specific sound you had in mind with the self-titled album? It's a loaded question, but yeah, I think you get what I'm saying here.
Yeah, I think, like I said, like a lot had changed, and I think we knew where we wanted it to go. We knew in our heads that we knew the songs that we had a kind of long short list. So there was like a couple of extras that we weren't, you know, we were like, we could swap a few out. Yeah. We weren't quite sure. So we kind of went in within our heads to record it with that list in our minds. And I think we knew in our heads what we wanted it to be and what we wanted it to sound like. And I don't think we'd anticipated quite how much the Woodstock place itself would influence us. And that experience, because it really did influence the music and the creating. And, you know, we went with the stock songs, but we created the intros and the middle eights and the, you know, instrumental breaks, and all of that stuff was created in the studio or in our Airbnb the night before when we knew we were going in to record it the next day. So that all kind of happened whilst we were there. But the actual songs themselves and the sound, we knew, I think, in our heads what that was going to be. But having, it goes to show, I think, having really good producers is really, really important, because there's certain things that they pull out of it that we wouldn't think of.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dolores, for example, Simon Felice said, can you sing it, the two of you, can you sing it in unison together? And I was like, we're a harmony band. That's not really what we do. And he was like, trust me. He was like, trust me, just try it. And we did it. And we were like, bloody hell, that's brilliant. That's really cool. So just little things like that would change along the way. And that would be influenced by, you know, Simon and David and Steve and Lee, who we had with us as well. And our experience, like I said, of being there and what we felt like needed we needed to bring to that song on that day.
Yeah. And actually as well, like the full journey of this album as well, like from like when we technically, I suppose, when we started writing for it, like
day one,
along, like almost like album one, basically, you know. But the process of getting there was like a bit more drawn out, because we had setbacks, like things got put back and rearranged whilst we were with Decca still, and you know. We had several different trips and worked with lots of different producers, you know. And we'd always had Simon and David like in our mind's eye, but when it first came to putting it out, like we're working on it, they weren't available, and so we went all over the shop, you know, all over the US, and it was actually years kind of in the making before we even got to like decide and get out to Woodstock and start doing that, and even. Just before that point, we were still having like, and even in the studio, we were still having like last minute changes, you know, we had our songs in our mind's eye, but then, you know, it gets to that point when you're putting them together and suddenly you're going, is that going to work with that? Is that
going to work
with that?
Yeah.
And then you had to make like really difficult choices to like make like cuts and change things around.
Yeah.
So actually, like as much as it was kind of set in our minds, like we knew where we wanted to go, and the sound changed when we got to Woodstock and the arrangements and everything, but the actual journey of this album and everything that's happened between,
even before the pandemic,
even
like before the pandemic, was all of the stuff that happened before it, and then the pandemic. So in our heads we were going, 2020, it's our year, that's our year.
Man, I remember saying that myself. Oh yeah.
Oh my god, you know, we just did not know what was going to hit us. So, you know, but I think a lot of these songs, a lot of the stories and a lot of the messages that are in the songs have a new meaning and new life and a different kind of poignancy about them
post-pandemic
because there's so much about light at the end of the tunnel, and like you're stronger together and hope. And you know, it's it, as much as there's some kind of sadder, darker songs, the overall message is quite hopeful and it is quite positive.
Which we needed.
Which we needed at the time. It's what we needed to hear. It's what we needed to write. And
well, we were going through a lot pre-pandemic, and so this was the album we wrote to tell each other, it's going to be okay, and we're going to get through this. And then we just had that extra challenge of but now everyone else is like, this is really cool.
Water on
It was like it was a long old journey, but it's made the destination. It's made the destination all that more like worthwhile to reach.
Tara's like going further back as the metaphor gets deeper and deeper. Shout out to Simon and David, because they helped you with the production. I was going to talk about the production next. You guys fill that out for me, because it sounded so pure from the heart. It even had that old school production sound. Like I heard everything, and it was done at Woodstock. Is that you guys mentioned that? Yeah. I mean, check. Like the way you guys have done this album. Now, Chess, I'm going to quote you here, because I talked about it earlier in the interview. We are big dreamers. Marty Stewart and Connie Smith, you know this is coming. And both are legends in country music lore. Marty, for anyone who doesn't know, I'm surprised, you should know Marty Stewart by now. 5-time Grammy Award winner and former member of Johnny Cash's band, for crying out loud. I mean, do I need to say any more? Because he wrote a song called Dreams. And it's a song that he had written with his wife, fellow country star, Connie Smith. They wrote the song and they handed it over to you three to give it the life it needed. I mean, in my opinion, you guys did the song justice. Like, this was the way I felt it was meant to be sung. And it was created in the iconic, the Cash Cabin in Hendersonville. I mean, seriously, like, what was it like bringing in someone like Marty and Connie into your world of manifesting something like this? Like, do you even have words to it? Even if you guys are in complete silence, I'll totally understand.
I don't think we could ever get bored of talking about Marty, but we talk about him all the time because we owe, I don't want to say everything, but we owe an awful lot to Marty Stewart. We, just to kind of read, to encapsulate that relationship quite quickly, he played a gig over here in 2018. He played a gig, he played the O2, which is like the biggest venue you can play in London. So he played that and we got to see him play and he was amazing. And then he was playing, I think, 5 or 6 dates in the UK, and we were offered the opportunity to support him and his fabulous Superlatives, which is his band. And they make us look like we're just learning how to do harmonies.
Babies.
Like, just, they are so expert in everything that they do. And, children. You know, wonderful. And he must have heard us sing at this gig we'd done at Cadogan Hall, but we didn't know that because they kind of at that point they'd said hi and stuff, but you know, we know how stressful touring is. You just leave them to it. You don't want to be like hey and hi, and so we'd left them. And then in our dressing rooms in Newcastle earlier that day, we were sound checking, and you can spot Marty Stewart a mile away, you know. He's got such a distinctive cool style. Just looks fantastic.
And the presence, as soon as he's in the room, everyone's like, oh, Marty's here.
So we were this like unknown band sound checking in this venue, and Marty Stewart kind of saunters in completely on his own and takes a seat in the middle of the auditorium. And so we were like, it's like, come on, play us a song.
No pressure at all.
Yeah.
And we were joking the other day, but you know, during sound check, when it's those early days, you don't want to play the songs that you need to sound check. You know, there's always those ones who are like, I don't think I really know how this goes. We were like, let's not play them. Let's just play anything that we know.
We basically played him a set.
Of just anything we thought was okay. And he came to our dressing room afterwards and he'd said, oh, hey, kids. And he always calls us kids. So we love that. And he said, have you guys heard of the Grand Ole Opry? So we were like, yeah. I said, do you know the Ryman in Nashville? And we were like, yeah. And do you know Graceland? Have you heard of Graceland? And like age, like we all have, but AJ, like Elvis is basically your god, isn't he? He's like, you want such a...
Tell me everything I know.
Yeah. And he said, Tony just said, oh, I do this little late night jam at the Ryman Auditorium. Chris Stapleton's going to be playing. John Prine's going to be playing. Margot Price, The Byrds. I'd love it if you guys wanted to come out and play, if you fancy doing that. By that point, our album...
AJ was on the floor.
I was crying. I was crying.
On the floor.
By that
I don't blame you one bit.
Yeah. The album wasn't out. We hadn't played a gig outside of the UK. And I think we thought that he was wonderful, but I think we thought that that was never going to happen because, you know, it's just, why would that happen? Of course, that wasn't going to happen. But it did.
It did.
Yeah. You know, and he's just amazing. And so when we formed this kind of relationship, forged, I suppose, this relationship with him. And so this one morning in Nashville, he brought his mother over, who's in her early 90s, and he came and sat in our Airbnb and he grabbed a guitar. And he said, oh, me and Connie have played this song, we've written the song, and we'd love to give it to you guys and see what you can do with it. But he just sat in front of us in this room and he just played us this song. And it was just one of those looking back on it moments where you could pinch yourself going, is this apps, you know, him and Connie between them must have 20 Grammys, you know, and he was touring with Chris Stapleton at the time on all these huge stadiums across America. It just mad. So such an incredible honor and pressure to be given that, I would say.
Well, that was it, wasn't it? It was our first international international debut gig was the Rock. So that was it. First gig we'd done outside of the UK was at the Ryman Auditorium.
And the day, like, we were really jet lagged. Was it like the same day or the day after we landed?
Yeah.
It was the day after we landed in Nashville.
Yeah.
So we didn't really know what was going on. Our heads were kind of out anyway. We'd taken in Nashville. Like, Tara and I hadn't been to Nashville before, and AJ had. So we were kind of like, oh my God, this place is amazing. Yeah. Wow, look at all the lights and the music and everything.
Everything's so shiny.
We're like thrown onto the Ryman Auditorium stage to sound check, and we're like, oh my God, what is going on? But yeah, I mean, I think we took it in our stride and believed in ourselves enough that we could kind of get through it and not crack under the pressure. But Marty and Connie have both just taken us under their wing and just absolutely any opportunity that they've had, they've supported us, championed us, you know, shouted us out, whatever it is, they've been there and they've done that. And, you know, at that late night jam, Marty introduced us and he said, right, I want you to give these guys a really warm welcome. They're from the UK and your guys are going to love them. And so instantly we had the audience in the palm of our hand because Marty said so.
Yeah.
Marty said that they were going to like us. So they did.
Yeah.
And it's that kind of championing, it's that kind of support that you can't pay for. You can't, you know, it's just one of those things that we were so lucky enough to cross paths with Marty at some point and get, you know, like you said, kind of make that relationship that we've done, then gone on to do all these other things, like, you know, have this song Dreams on our album and go to the Cash Cabin and record it with him. Like, that's just...
I mean, listen to what you're saying. Like, it's crazy, right? You're talking about what you guys did. And here's the thing, Nashville, AJ, I know you're like on the floor, you're talking about, but places like Nashville, even Texas, you know, cities here, they have the Wandering Hearts name all over it because that's, it exactly caters to that audience. And I feel like it's like a story. Like, it's meant to be. Like, you guys were meant to play your first show in the States in Nashville, where, what's the nickname for that city? It's the Music City, right? It's why it's called that. There's so much rich history. You guys are involved in that. And again, I'm one of Millions fans out there, but I look forward to the day that you guys get a Grammy. You guys go up there and then talk about how your experience was. I mean, I know. I'm jumping ahead here, but I'm just saying, I mean, things just have a way. You guys know where to find me, so come get me when that happens. Things just have a way of working themselves out. And throughout my life, you know, it's like, I come from a family of musicians, so I can definitely pertain to, you know, what you guys are talking about, like seeing your idols, like, just help you get to where you are. And you guys have done it yourselves too. You know, between writing and then, you know, structuring the songs and like the production process and everything you've experienced, everything to this album, to where it is right now. I want the listeners to know how important this is to you, because the lyricism throughout this album, and I was excited to talk about this because the origins of that center around, you know, celebrating life, new beginnings, and striving to shine through a darkening world, especially at a time like today. I feel like it really resonates with a lot of people. You know, you have a song like Gold, which comes from the ideals of something becoming more beautiful after being broken. Kintsugi, which is the Japanese art form, which, by the way, you guys are not the only ones who actually came on the show and talked about how Kintsugi influenced your song, which I love that, how that's like a commonality among artists, that Japanese art form. And then you have a song like Dolores, which is about not having to suffer through your struggles alone. And then, of course, Dreams, which is as simple as a message that is, you have to have dreams, things that inspire you, like what you guys just talked about. I mean, it's, again, like, see what I mean? Everything has a way of working themselves out. Dreams was meant to be that song that Marty was a part of. So I'm just saying. Now, yeah. Having said all that, I began to wonder also if there was a theme to this album. Like, if that is true, like, to what level do you guys like to have a theme or concept for your music? And, you know, is that true? Like, how important is something like that to you?
I think when we're writing particularly, like, we tend to, like, the song will kind of just go from either where we've started, like, either we've come in with it and gone, like, here's an idea for a song, or we'll go, there's maybe a theme or an idea here that we want to work around putting together. But in terms of actually, like, putting the album together and, like, thematically that way, like, for the first album, that was never really that much of a consideration. It's the songs that we've done traditionally have almost, like, had a way of, like, making obvious, like, which, like, drawing other songs towards them in a way that's always been kind of easy to identify, mm-hmm. hasn't it, when it's come to, like, tracking?
But I just wonder, it's like, thinking about it, you know, when you've got, like, a partner and you end up, like, thinking the same thing at the same time, and you're like, oh my god, why does that happen, like, we keep doing that, but it's because you spend so much time together, like, that's why that happens. But I think, and I only just thought it now, but when we were writing that album, as I said, like, we were going through a lot, and we were going through something that only the three of us could share. There wasn't anyone outside of the three of us that could really get what we were having to contend with. And so we became one another's support bubble. We became one another's, you know, and it's a bit like, again, a partnership, I suppose, when, you know, if your partner's not okay, you and you're not okay, but if they're less okay, you kind of find it in yourself to be like, okay, I've got to take this for now. I've got to do it until you can do that. And so I remember, you know, really picking each other up an awful lot. So then, because we wrote so much of that during that year to 18 months of, like, what are you, you know, it wasn't like we were all holidaying in different places or reading different books. You know, you would come into a writing session and you're like, what do you want to talk about? And you're like, I want to talk about the fact that it sucks right now. Yeah. I want to talk about the fact that right now, like, I'm upset and I'm mad and I'm struggling.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you can't, you know, can't write 12 songs about that. Because it's like, so what, but what's the thing that I would say to my, it's going to sound naff, but to my sister, to my brother, to my best friends, like, what's the thing that I would want to hear? What's the thing that I would want to say? Yeah. And so I think we wrote those songs for each other,
yeah,
for what we needed at that time. And then we got through it and we were like, oh, this is so great. And now 2020 is our year. But it meant that that now gave everybody else the time to go, this is what we needed when we had our crap year. Yeah. And so maybe this is what you needed when you had your crap year. And maybe that's what you
was. It was totally, in hindsight, it was totally like you said, and I think we have talked about it a bit before, like almost like like diary entries of what we were experiencing, what we were feeling, what we were going through, what we needed to say, what we needed to get off our chest, what we needed to tell each other, to support each other. And it was only really in hindsight, once we saw the list and the songs all together, that we went, bloody hell, this is actually like, this fits. This is like a diary of our last 18 months, and this is everything that we went through, this is everything that we felt, this is what we needed to hear. And I think we didn't have that in mind when we went into writing the album, but looking back at it and putting it together, and now it's all together, we've gone, well, actually, that makes total sense.
And pretty much the last song we wrote for the album, just this is a great interview for you. This is great because I'm thinking about it. But the last song we wrote for this album was Never Too Late. Yeah. And Never Too Late is probably the most positive song. It's like, actually, don't not do something because of the fact that, oh, I would have done that, but I'm 40 now. Mm. I would have learned the piano. I'd love to play piano. Yeah. I'd have loved it. Well, learn it. Learn it. Just go on. Because it's like that time is going to pass anyway. And it was such a song of
the
light
at the end of the tunnel.
Joyous. Yeah. And it makes perfect sense that was pretty much the last song we wrote. Is like, we can do this. It's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Sorry, my mind is exploding again. This is great. By the way, I know we're reaching towards the end of the interview. I know I'll let you guys get back to your lives, I promise. But, you know, as you're talking about reminiscing or just looking back on some like material that you wrote, something simple like that song you're talking about. And throughout my life, you know, I always think about, I should have done this. I should have done this. I should have done this. If it's one thing I learned in the pandemic or still ongoing, whatever you may have, that's the thing I want to stay consistent with. Like, I don't want to just say I want to do it and not do it, you know. For the last like couple of months, I've been doing the things that I said I wanted to do, and it feels good. You feel good about yourself. You're actually doing something that you are passionate about. You guys are putting something on here that I can't wait for the whole world to listen to. I mean, just, it's a reason why you guys called it The Wandering Hearts, because it represents you guys more than anything else. And I feel like you could see this album as a snapshot of where you are in a certain time in your life, looking back, as I do with all albums. You know, I mean, I grew up with a band like the Smashing Pumpkins. I always look at, you know, Siamese Dream. That's in my top five of all time. I look at back at that album as a certain point in my life, how it allowed me to grow into who I am today. I know we've covered a good amount of ground on this amazing interview, but, you know, from the different experiences and perspectives in each of your timelines that you have taken in, which we've discussed about, and performing for as long as you have, and the people you have met and worked with during this record, including your, I didn't even mention this earlier, your Bob Harris Emerging Artist Award that you won. I mean, your relationship with Marty and Connie, your relationship with your producers and fans, this pandemic. And this sounds like, you know, you still have much left to put out there with your artistic vision. And I'm excited to see where you guys go from here. This is definitely something that you have a passion for. And I sound like a broken record, and you've experienced plenty already in your career and then some already, you know. Have your aspirations as individuals or even just musicians, have they changed or evolved since when you first started performing in the industry? Like, do you see things differently today?
Definitely. I think for me personally, and definitely since the pandemic, I feel like you can't take it too seriously, you know, like, because you just don't know what's going to happen. And if you're not having fun doing it, something's wrong. If it's not fun for everyone, something's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're having fun, it's not fun for all three of us, something's wrong. And I think that became really apparent. And like, the things that are important became really apparent. And I think when you have everything taken away, you realize the things that are really important that you need to maintain and to stay in it. And I think, you know, being signed to a major record label and now being signed to an indie record label, we've learned a huge amount just in that process.
Yeah.
And that's that, you know, behind the scenes of the industry and, you know, and what goes on with that, we've learned all about that, and you know, figures and statistics and, you know, percentages and like stuff that, like, you know, you don't go into the music industry thinking about any of that stuff. You go, I want to write songs and I want to do all of that. Yeah. And along the way, you start learning and hearing all these stories and like all this stuff that goes on behind the scenes. You're like, I had no idea that. It happened the other day, and I went, I had absolutely no idea that was a thing. That's what we did.
Yeah.
And absolutely no idea that's how it works. We got paid to do that. Like, you just, there's so many things that pass you by, and you get to a point, and I think obviously having had the time like we have, it's kind of made me go, oh, well, you know, all of that stuff, well, it doesn't matter. It's not signed to a major, it doesn't matter. not done that, doesn't matter, whatever. We're having a really good time and we really like the music that we've made and we're really excited for people to hear that. Yeah. And we've also had a really cool and awesome career up until this point. So if it did all end, you know, whatever. But yeah, I'm massively different person. We're all very different people from when we first met, let alone from when we started.
A lot more hair.
Yeah,
but it's definitely like even in the last like 18 months or whatever, I feel like our communication got even better.
Yeah,
like we're pretty good communicators anyway, like particularly when we write, and ordinarily like it's a band but it's a business, you know, so we're sort of all equal partners in this business, and so that is necessary, makes communication like pretty important. But on top of that, there's all the other stuff that we do as friends and as like partners and bandmates.
Yeah.
That over the last 18 months, like not being able to do the normal stuff, but still things have to happen in that time. Like it's been really crazy because like I definitely feel like our communication being put under that pressure and having the challenges that the last year and a half brought. Actually, we kind of like in together we rose to those challenges, and like communication got better. We were like, what can we do? How can we use these opportunities? Like, as much as things are stacked against us, and it's been perspective's been there, but it's also given us like all kinds of bars to try and like hurdle over, you know, every time. And fortunately for us, I think because of all that, the work that's gone in before it, we've been able to,
yeah. You know, growing together, I think that's important. I think it's also important to, I think it's easy to lose track of yourself the more successful you are. I think it's also important to kind of just push everything back and kind of just look at it from the outside. Just take a deep breath, exhale, and just remember why you do what you do and kind of just remind yourself, you know, just and then go back into it. You know, I think it's important to, you know, look at that because, I mean, I know you guys have seen it. Like so many other artists have kind of just, it's all about success and nothing else, you know, and they don't really, you know what I'm saying? Like there are artists out there who just don't, it's all about the business and nothing else. And you guys, go ahead.
It's almost like how you measure success. Mm-hmm. And something that our manager said to us really early days, and I've never forgotten it, is he was like, you really have to celebrate all of the small wins. Because he was like,
definitely.
If someone said to us, you know, one day you will open for Tom Petty at Hyde Park, we'd have been like, oh, that's it. We do that, like that'll be it. And then you get played on the radio. But if you're not careful, you go, well, when am I going to go up to the B list? Well, when am I going to be on the A list? When are we going to do Wembley? When are we? And he was just like, it's actually like, he said, you know, actually there are so many great bands that you probably don't even know the name of that have fantastic, you know, fan bases. They have a fantastic life, like, you know, kind of work-life balance, for want of a better word. And they, you know, and they don't have to deal with the level of scrutiny and fame that, off the top of my head, like Billie Eilish, Dua Lipa, it's like, he was like, you know, I just think it's like, if you can make your whole living out of performing and enjoy it, then that's success.
Yeah.
And I think that's so important to remember.
There's also no guarantee. It's like, there's no guarantee that we'll all still be doing this time next year, because who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Hopefully we will. We want to be. But
yeah, I want you to be. God, I hope so.
Exactly, because, you know, like, so many artists and bands have not made it through the pandemic. Yeah.
Gosh, yeah. And
there's no guarantee that, you know, like something might happen. I don't know. The management company might disappear and we might lose. You know, there's just no guarantee. And so I think you have to live in it in the moment, and you have to, you know, celebrate all of the things as they happen, no matter how big or small, and, you know, and hope that it continues to work.
As you're telling me that, if you weren't musicians, what would you be doing right now?
Oh, probably like cleaning someone's house. Because I literally can't do anything else.
I don't know, actually. When I was a kid,
I really like cleaning. So.
I do too, actually.
Can you do that?
I'm very clean, actually.
Throwing that out there. I was going to be in the army, or I don't know. I always thought I was going to be in the army, but then I think when I started getting into music, that's when I was like, I'm not going to do the army anymore. So
you were trying to imagine AJ.
I can't think of anything
else to say. The hair, that, okay, the hair, the hair probably wouldn't be there because you wouldn't have the hair.
So. Like, wait a second, it's like army, timekeeping, like conforming. Taking orders,
shaving your head,
being told what to do. I literally.
Yeah, you get to blow shit up.
I cannot think of a worse career.
I've definitely changed now, but that was always it. It was like, this doesn't work out. There's always the army.
It's always interesting to look back on something like that. Like, what would you be doing if it wasn't for music? And here's the thing, an answer could be like, I can't imagine doing anything else besides music. You know, I started off trying to be an engineer, you know, and I kind of just kind of just you know, went by like what everyone else was doing. But like I said, I come from a family of musicians and my mom's a professional music artist, so it's like it's kind of just, I kind of, again, what's the commonality in this, like the theme in this interview is things have a way of working themselves out, and here I am doing what I love to do, talking to amazing people like you. But I don't know, it's just something to, it's interesting to talk about when what other interests kind of feed your creativity within the band. I love that you say cleaning. I like, you're like the first person that's like pertains to what I do. Like,
I love cleaning. What can I say?
Anyway, wait, you guys both answered. Tara, what did you have? Did you?
I think I'd probably be a really, I don't know if I'd be very good at it, but I read a lot. I really like books. So I love the idea of writing. I think I always
I always think as well, you would be a good lawyer.
I could see like, that.
If you had to retrain, like, you know, the government told us that we had to.
Like, yeah.
Judy Collins, QC.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, so maybe, I mean, if I was bright enough, maybe I was...
You are bright enough. She's okay, bright enough.
Then QC, then I'd be a barrister.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, but I think something I like, you know, I am... I love stories. I love meeting people. I love stories. I just love meeting people and reflecting on things. And so I think if you have an opportunity to get lost in someone else's story, and I think it's just anything with words, nothing that is, I don't know what side of your brain it is, but nothing that's like maths or science or...
Is that all right?
I think that's the right side. Yeah. Wait, hold on. What is it? I'm actually left-handed, so I think we think on our right side. Is that the saying?
I think the right side is the maths and the science.
Okay.
Like the creative.
Yeah, I went to like a grammar school, which is like if you pass like a test, it's like a school you don't have to pay for, but it means you like were bright enough to get in. And so when it was like English and stuff, it was great. I remember sitting in these maths class with these kids that were like super bright, and they'd be, you know, they'd explain it, and I'd really want to, you know, when you get really want to get it, so I'd be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So does that make sense? And I go, mm-hmm, yeah. And just never, really, and I think we share that, actually, none of us.
Terrible at maths.
Yeah, not
terrible at maths. Yeah. Not much.
Although maths has come same here. A lot of us interviewing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's maths weird. And music. Because we're like, that's it, they go hand in hand. In a world like in those layers of the world that we can't see,
I'm just still trying to imagine you like in the army, like just no hair. And just...
Oh, I wouldn't do it now.
Now that you said it, it's just like maybe that could be an idea for like a music video soon. I don't know. That's maybe.
Drive a tank around.
That's true. Just dress up as if you like pretend you're in the army.
Chess and be a cleaner.
That'd be cool, right? Like you guys like I don't know, like a music video and you guys are actually doing the other things that you talked about, like you're cleaning, you're a writer, you're in the army, and then...
Oh, wait, I want to choose a better one now.
Now she wants a horse involved.
No, hold on. I'm just saying, like, cleaning places...
I'd be a horse trainer. I'd work at a stables.
Oh
man, I had a really good like scene like in my head, like the scene opens up, it pans into the house and it just goes towards you. And you're cleaning, and then you just look out the window, and then, you know, everything kind of just builds from there, and then transition to AJ, and then transition to Tara. I don't know. I went to film school for 3 years, so I'm a huge nut for cinematography.
Send us your fantasy treatment, and then we'll see if it works.
Yeah. We'll stay in touch on the socials, guys. This has been such a great time. I can't wait till we do this again with food. You know, when you guys come to Dallas.
In person,
we'll do it after the show, so you guys aren't like burned out, which would be great actually, funny to see, but we'll save that for in person. Hopefully that is soon. Do you guys have any, again, this is such an honor. Do you guys have any last words, just any shout outs, anything you'd like to plug in or mention for the Wandering Hearts before we finish things off here? I know you guys have that tour. Exciting stuff coming up. You guys have a new album, so the floor is yours. Yeah. Whatever you want to say.
We'll definitely have some US stuff coming in. We'll have some, we're hoping to get out to the States.
Yeah.
Really soon.
We've been announced for the Americana Fest in the States in September, end of September. But obviously it's just dependent on whether we can, we're actually allowed to fly. But we're saying yes to everything that we can.
If anyone wants us, you just need to just book us and we'll be there. But yeah. We love the States and like the American, everyone in America has always been, well, that have introduced themselves to us.
Yeah, so I know some of the booking agents here in Dallas, so I'm going to work with them and obviously I'll stay in touch with you guys and stay in touch with everyone you work with, and hopefully we can get something here soon. Where in the States is that festival? Do you know what city?
Nashville.
Oh gosh, that's like the perfect place to see you guys. Gosh, I hope that happens. It's just around the corner too, so I don't want to speak too soon, but
no, exactly. And we've not kind of actually announced it properly, but they've announced us. But we've not promoted it yet just because we don't want to disappoint and not be able to make it. But no, other than that, obviously just the album and the album coming out, and we love everyone that we, like Tara said, that we've had the pleasure of meeting when we've come out to the States, and we've had such a warm welcome for all of the cities that we've visited and all of the different states that we've made it to, and we feel very, very lucky to have had the opportunities to meet and travel to as many places in America that we have. And you know, we started to build up such a great momentum before the pandemic, and we hope that we can try and pick that back up and work that back up again as soon as we can.
Yeah, you pretty much summed everything up for me. AJ, Chess, Tara, this has been again an honor, and everyone who's listening, this is the legendary Wandering Hearts. The self-titled drops August 6th on Cooking Vinyl. If you could do all of us a favor, who's listening, buy the album, because the artist can't do it without your help. I still buy records that's sitting in the corner of my room. I'm old-fashioned like that. But don't forget, you can listen to this podcast on all major podcast streams out there, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube. Check us out on interviewunderfire.com. Guys, stay safe out there in London. I know it's like getting dinner time for you guys, so I'll let you go here. I know this has been great, over an hour, and this has been such a great conversation. I feel like we could have talked for hours, but let's stay in touch. I'll talk to you soon, and I'm excited for everything from here and beyond for you guys. Nothing but love and success, and just the best for you guys from here on out.
Straight back at you.
Yeah, thank cheers,
you. All right. Love you guys. All right. We'll talk to you later.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
I've seen them come, I've seen them go. Some move fast and some move slow. Fragile as a rose, but some are strong. Some last forever and some move on.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to Interview Under Fire podcast. If you guys liked what you heard, please subscribe and share our channel. And please leave a 5-star review, as that helps us tremendously. If you'd like to check out more, visit www.interviewunderfire.com or our social media channels on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And finally, we want to thank you all for the support you've been giving us. Keep it burning.